Angura. Ah, he's. This is the other Alan in my life. And in a matter of fact, that's what he's often called, the other Alan. Oh, I have skipped. I apologize. I'm trying to get us back on time. Mas, my apologies to you and to Chris and to Marty. I am really apologize. I need to not do this. No. Well, I'm sorry. I'm trying to get us back on time, and so I looked and I said, "Oh, it's 11:20. Oh, good, we're on time." But this does mean there will be no questions and answers this morning. So, gentlemen, I will let you arrange yourselves while I go off and try to arrange myself and take 20 minutes to figure out and get some tea. So, gentlemen, go.
Good morning, team. Thank you. Our topic, which I think we have 20 minutes for others it's a buzzer, for me it's a bullshit alert. Our topic is stand your ground, and in the world of use of force law and deadly force law, which is one of the most mature bodies of law there is, this one has, in the last few years, in the last couple of years in particular, become a huge political football and has become subject to tremendous distortion by the media, the pundits, and of course the prohibitionists who have all seized on it. At law, stand your ground is a very simple principle. It says the law-abiding citizen attacked unlawfully need not retreat. They may stand their ground and repel force with force at a necessary level. If you go back centuries ago into the early English common law, there arose a concept called homicide se defendendo, intended to discourage dueling among the upper classes and fatal bar brawls among the lower classes and whatever thatched-roofed building passed as a pub in an English village then. It said if you could retreat from the conflict, you were expected to do so. If you failed to do so, you bore some degree of fault. In this country, some states followed that element of English common law, and we call them today the retreat states. Some never did. Here in Texas, and in roughly the same time frame in Florida and many other states, the retreat requirement was rescinded, and that is the core of today's stand your ground laws. Unfortunately, it's not the core of the controversy. It was understood, even in the retreat states, then and now, that retreat would only be demanded if it could be accomplished in complete safety to oneself and to other innocent parties that we had the right or even the duty to protect. Then and now, the law does not demand you to throw the baby from the sleigh to placate the pursuing wolves. It does not expect you to abandon your elderly grandmother to the muggers as you run away. The law does not demand that you turn your back on the upraised knife or try to outrun a bullet. Where some of the controversy came from, because of recent events in the last couple of years, the Florida law has become kind of the locus and the focus of this. The 776 series in the Florida statutes, beginning at 776.012, going through 776.032, was actually package legislation that was very well intended by the pro-gun side. But when you've got three or four concepts being covered in one package of legislation, you can't give it four names. It encompassed stand your ground, and in 776.012, it said that if you were attacked unlawfully, you could hold your ground and fight back. It also at one point reinforced Castle Doctrine. Now, Castle Doctrine had existed, but was not clear in the black letter law. A lot of folks don't realize that you've got to look three different places to find out what the laws are on use of force, and particularly lethal force, in your jurisdiction. There's the black letter law, the statutes and the codes, where everybody looks first. But some of them stop. You need to look past that into the state's case law from the higher courts. and also the recommended jury instructions. In all 50 states, in one or another of those arenas, we've had Castle Doctrine. But like many other states, Florida led the way in quantifying it into the black letter law and essentially stating the common law principle of Castle Doctrine. Your home is your castle, attack there, you need not retreat. The other side has distorted this and is saying, oh my God, in Florida and the other Stand Your Ground and Castle Doctrine states, you can kill any trespasser. That's not what it said, and it's never what it said. 776.13 has a presumption of danger if it was the violent, tumultuous entry, a forced entry by a home invader into the home. There's nothing in there that says just because your home is your castle, you're allowed to have an execution chamber and a dungeon. There's nothing that said you can shoot the little kid who tried to chase the baseball that went through your window into your living room. But the other side has distorted that horribly. Another element of the Florida law has stated that the police cannot arrest you in a self-defense incident unless they have probable cause to believe that your use of force was unlawful. And the other side has twisted this. You saw the Brady campaign, the billboards. Don't go to Florida. They have a law that says if you look at them cross-eyed and they say they're in fear, they can murder you. How many have read that? How many have seen that? That's totally bogus. Read the damn law. From 776.12 through all the rest of it, it's understood that the standard is the longstanding standard of the reasonable man doctrine. The three-prong test of what would a reasonable and prudent person have done in the exact situation, knowing what you, the defendant, knew. But now we hear this distorted into the police can't arrest you if you claim self-defense. No. The law says we need probable cause to believe you've broken the law. How many cops or former cops do we have in here? Stand up. First, thank you for your service. But second, when the hell could any of us have ever arrested any of them unless we had probable cause for anything? It's bogus. It's smoke and mirrors. There's nothing there. I've heard one guy from one of the prosecutors' associations, some of you saw it in the debate on Cato Institute on this topic, Stand Your Ground, say that, oh my goodness, the police will no longer investigate homicides. What a slap in the face to 800,000 American men and women in blue. We've heard the criminals will murder each other and claim self-defense and get away with it. Criminals have murdered each other and claimed self-defense since criminals fought each other for turf. And the cops go in and sort it out. They investigate, the prosecutors prosecute, and we are done. And it's gone in the history of crime that way since time immemorial. And in a moment, I'll turn it over to my brothers, but let me leave you with one final thought. Look at what many believe to be the first murder. The death of one Abel at the hands of one Cain. Suppose Cain had come back and said, I'm pleading self-defense. It was awful. There I was in the field. My brother went crazy. He grabbed me by the throat. He had me down in the field. He was strangling me. Everything went black. I grabbed a rock. I hit him in the head, and he's dead. Well, the authorities of the time would have looked at that. And the authorities of the time would have been Adam and Eve. And Adam might have said, my son, I'd like to believe you. But if your brother was strangling you, why are there no marks on your throat? And Eve might have said, my son, you tell a good story, but if he had you down in the field, why is there no dirt on your back? And the truth would have come out, and that has been the way homicide investigation has been since man began killing his fellow man. And the other side is simply BSing you on this. In the end, let me close with the words I closed with yesterday when I spoke on another topic for Texas Bar Association at their Firearms Law Symposium, which, by the way, they gave huge kudos there for Texas State Rifle Association and all they've done for you. Damn near 200 lawyers. My God, I felt like Custer at the last stand. But they were your sharks, and they swim for you and be proud of them. But the words I close there, I'll close with now, and they come from the greatest commentator on the common law, Lord Blackstone. And as our sister told you earlier, he had said the same thing centuries before. Self-defense is the highest of all human rights. Stand your ground on it. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Chris Bird. I'm the author of a couple of books. One's called The Concealed Handgun Manual, which you can get out there. And the other one is Thank God I Had a Gun, True Accounts of Self-Defense. I'm going to get off topic here, but I've heard the name Bloomberg so often that I thought I'd better add my 10 cents worth. This summer, my wife and I sailed to Bermuda, and it was at the time when there was the Inter-Island Games, and we volunteered as assistant range officers for some of the shooting competitions. And basically, if you're a shooter in Bermuda, it's probably worse than being a shooter in New York, New Jersey. 2 years ago, the police chief, or commissioner as he's called, seized all the handguns, which were already kept on a military base, and said that's illegal and transferred them all to the police armory. And when the shooters wanted their guns to compete in the Inter-Island Games, they got them about a week before the competition was to start. Anyway, while I was there and hearing all these stories, I also heard that Michael Bloomberg has a multi-million dollar mansion on Bermuda. And when he comes to visit, while the police don't even have guns there as a general rule, Bloomberg brings his personal security, the members of which are armed. And I figure that that was probably another instance of hypocrisy by the New York mayor. So that said, I was going to talk a little bit about the history of the duty, no duty to retreat. However, I don't want to run over time, and I know we're running behind time, and Julianne will probably get on my case if I go too long. So I want to tell you a story that is, it's a stretch, but it has a connection to no duty to retreat. It's a story about what happens to a guy in Texas who stands his ground. And I found it because I was working on a second edition of Thank God I Had a Gun, and hope to have that out before Christmas. And this story is in it. It relates to Rick Perry, our governor, as well. About a year ago in July, a guy called Vic Stacy. He lived in a trailer park, an RV park, about 5 miles north of Brownwood in central Texas. And it was a hot day. He was in his trailer. The air conditioning was running. And as a matter of fact, he was watching the first Rambo movie. And he heard some shots. Half a dozen or so. He didn't think too much about it. It's not too unusual to hear shots in that part of Texas. He looked out the window, couldn't see anything, and a couple of minutes later, he gets a call from a neighbor, Phil Brown. Phil Brown says to Vic Stacy, Vic, come over here. Bring your gun. We've got a dead man here. So Vic grabs not his AR-15, which is in the trailer as well, but his Colt Python 357, stuffs it down the front of his shirt, and walks over towards Phil Brown's RV. And on the way, he looks to his left, and he sees a guy called Charlie Connor, who's coming out of his trailer armed with a 30-30 Marlin with a scope on it. And He told me I knew that Charlie Connor was the cause of the problem. Charlie Connor had got crosswise with pretty well everybody in the RV park, and at one time or another. And on this particular day, he had been arguing with a couple who had two dogs, and he accused the dogs of pooping around his trailer. So he goes back to his trailer, gets a 9mm, walks back to where the couple are at, and shoots and kills the husband, shoots and kills both dogs, shoots and kills the wife. And Brown, who's sleeping, wakes up at this and looks out, sees the husband lying dead, and that's when he called Vic. So Vic's about reached Phil Brown's RV when the first responding police officer arrives. He wheels in to the RV park and stops about 40 yards from where Connor is taking cover behind a live oak tree, about a trunk about this big, he opens up on the police officer as he's getting out of his vehicle, shoots at him. Vic is way off to one side, so he's got an open shot at Connor. And he figures, well, if I don't do something, that young police officer is going to get killed. So he pulls out his Colt Python, leans across the front of the RV, the hood of the RV, Brown's RV, and fires a shot at Connor. He hits Connor in the thigh. The range is 57 yards. And Connor goes down, and then he starts shooting at Vic. He said all he did was spray gravel onto Vic's legs. But Vic fires four more shots, one of which was found in one of Connor's lungs. By this time, the police officer has unlimbered his patrol rifle, an assault rifle, and fires seven times, hitting Connor three times. So Connor is DRT, dead right there. And, okay, and so shortly after, we have the sheriff arrives, Bobby Grubbs, and he's a retired Texas Ranger. And he is briefed on what has happened and how it happened. And he speaks glowingly of Vic. So I go up a couple of weeks later and interview Vic, and we get along fine. And I get a call from him a little later, and he said, I got a call from the governor's office. They want to give me a rifle. And so some months later, actually March of this year, I got another call from Vic, and he says, Sheriff Grubbs is going to honor me with a plaque and stuff in Commissioner's Court. So I go up there and I take a few pictures. And that's fine. Bobby Grubbs commends Vic and also the policeman for dealing with the situation. So anyway, I go home, and the next day I get another call. And this is after Sandy Hook, bear in mind. And I rather thought, well, maybe Vic will, maybe Perry will just forget about that idea of presenting Vic with a rifle. But no, he says, I have to go to the legislature tomorrow, to the governor's office. So I turn up there, and sure enough, I go with Vic and his son into the governor's office, and he presents Vic with a LaRue Tactical 308 semi-automatic rifle from a grateful state. And so when Rick Perry says, I am a huge supporter of the Second Amendment, believe him. And now I guess I'm going to turn it over to Marty Hayes.
Folks, first of all, let me thank Alan and Julianne for inviting me here. But listen, I would rather listen to Alan Gura than myself, too. So I'm just going to cede my time to Alan and bring him up on the podium. So.